Okay, starting brand new Gemara now. With two dots. Amar Rava. Edim shehuk chashuv osef huzmu. Okay, it's brand new, but it's an old topic. We're going back to Edim Zayimim. Edim shehuk chashuv. They became hukkush, they were refuted, contradicted by another pair of Edim. Like Rashi explains, and like I indicated on the Marmukai, which we're going to skip the first Rashi and start with the second. Two Edim come, they came and testified that Reuven killed someone. Then two other Edim came and said, no, Reuven didn't kill him. And then, a third cat came, and said, you were with us. So, we'll give it Avram and Yitzchak. Avram and Yitzchak walked into the basin and said that Reuven killed Shimon. They came in on Sunday. They said that last Sunday Reuven killed Shimon. And then Moshe and Aaron walked in on Monday and they said, we were with Reuven last Sunday and he did not kill Shimon. He spent the whole day doing what such and such and we were with him the whole time. We watched. He never killed anyone. I said, and then on Tuesday, another two Edim, David and Shlomo, walk in and they say that last Sunday we were with Avram and Yitzchak, the Edim that came 2 days ago to say that Reuven killed Shimon. We were with them, but not complaining, we were with them somewhere else. So they claim that they saw Reuven kill Shimon in Kew Gardens Hills, but they were with us in Orlando. So that's the case of Edim Shehuk Chashu B'Soif Huzmu, that they gave their Edim on Sunday, they became Huk Chashu on Monday, and then they became Huzmu on Tuesday. Zakhtu Rabba Neharagin. They get killed. Why they get killed? As Edim Zaymim. They came in on Sunday and they were Zaymim to get Reuven killed. They claimed that Reuven killed Shimon. Reuven would then be Chayav Misa. But then it turned out that they were lying. We discovered on Tuesday that they were really in Orlando. So they're Neharagin. That doesn't sound, I think, to most people reading this Gemara for the first time, that doesn't sound like a Chiddush. That's not surprising. This would seem like a straightforward case of Edim Zaymim. On Sunday they said that Reuven killed Shimon. On Tuesday we discovered they weren't really there. So of course they're Edim Zaymim. What's unique about this case, though, is what happened on Monday. And the chiddush of Rava is that you shouldn't think that they're patur because of what happened on Monday. Even though on Monday, in between their edus and the edus of the mazimim, there was a hakasha, two edim came and said that Reuven didn't kill Shimon. Nevertheless, when Tuesday comes and they're huzmu, they're still neragim. And he explains why. He has a svara, the hakasha tchiles hazamahi elishalay nigmara. Because the hakhasha is the beginning of the hazam, it just isn't completed yet. But it's an incompleted, but it's the beginning of a hazama, and therefore it doesn't patra you. So there's some very important unspoken step over here. Rav is coming. I think anybody here, if we didn't know this Gemara, and I would have just if you never saw this Gemara, and I would have laid out this case. Two of them came in on Sunday, and they said the Reuven killed Shimon. And then on Monday, two Edim said that Reuven didn't kill Shimon. And then on Tuesday, two Edim came and said the first Edim were with us somewhere else. I think you all would have said, Avadu dechayev misa. But not because you thought of Rabbi Svara, the Hakash Achilas Hazama, but just because you don't know why he needs that Svara. Why isn't this a regular case of Hazama? Why is it relevant that on Monday, two Edim came and said that Reuven didn't kill Shimon? Who cares? What does that do? So what you see in this Gemara, there's the big chiddush in this Gemara is the Havamina. I mean, the chiddush for us is that the Gemara had a Havamina that this wouldn't be true. If Rava hadn't said this chiddush called Hakash Tchiles Hazama, we would have said that if there's a Hakasha first and then a Hazama, then the Hazama is not a Hazama, then they're Pater. They don't become Chayev Vasisim like Hakash Hazamam, because the Hakasha somehow undoes the Parasha of Hazama. And Rava comes to tell us that it doesn't, but why? Rava doesn't say because that was just a foolish idea that we had in our head, there's no reason why Hakasha should undo a Hazama. He says, because Hakasha tchilas Hazama. So what's going on here? It seems that the Havamina, the Svar that we were supposed to think, as the Svar Chitzayna is, that Edim can only become Zeimimim if, at the time that they're discovered to be Zeimimim, their Edus was, so to speak, a live Edus. It was live, it was working, it was doing its job. But if the Eidus had already become rendered ineffective, so then they don't get punished for if we then discover that they were lying. So we would have thought that that's what's going on over here. On Sunday they came in and they said Reuben killed Shimon. Oh, Gevaldik Beitzin thought that Reuben killed Shimon. These Eidim, thanks to these Eidim, Reuben was going to be put to death. At this point, their Eidus is an effective Eidus. But then Monday came along, and on Monday, two Eidim came in and said, no, Reuben didn't kill Shimon. Now, once that happens, so is Beitzin killing Shimon? I mean, Reuben, is Beitzin going to go kill Reuben like the first Eidim told him to do? They're not. Because even though they're not sure that the first Eidim were lying, it's a trade of trade, but they're also not sure that they were telling the truth. So Beitzin doesn't know what to do. Maybe Reuben killed Shimon, maybe Reuben didn't kill Shimon, but Lamaisa, somebody who might have done a crime, is not Chayav Misa for it. So at that point, if the story would have ended right then, their Eidus, we could say, is an ineffective Eidus. It's not really having any effect. They came in, they told Beitzin a story that I'm supposed to make Reuben Chayav Misa. Well, thank you, Yannick. They came in and they told Beitzin a story that's supposed to make Reuben Chayav Misa, but it wasn't going to make Reuben Chayav Misa. At this point, Reuben was already not going to be Chayav Misa. So, and then on Tuesday, in Zayim, another pair of the Mezimim come in and they say, Iman Reis, I'm not complaining. But we would have said, yeah, okay, but you're starting up with a meaningless Eidus. So they weren't in New York, they were in Orlando, but their Eidus wasn't really relevant anyway, it wasn't doing anything. So that's why I would have thought that they'd be Potter. Similar to, right, where we had this before, we had a couple of things that sort of resemble this. We had in the Gemara on Amud Aleph that if we discover that the Eidim were already puzzled when they said their Eidus, right? Let's say on Monday they came in and they told us an Eidus, but on Sunday they told us a different Eidus, right? So they said one Eidus on Sunday, one Eidus on Monday. And we thought that they were honest and truthful. We were believing everything they said. Later we discover that what they said on Sunday was a lie, right? Because next Sunday, other Eidim come and say that last Sunday, Monday, we're more complaining. Fine. So what they said on Sunday was a lie. So the Gemara said, then what they said on Monday is no longer subject to Hazama. So that if subsequently Eidim will come and say that what you said on Monday was Iman Reis and more complaining, they're not going to get punished for that. Why? Because they were already puzzled when they said the Eidus. It's not exactly like what we're learning over here, but we saw over there, the truth is, we had to shut him. What was going on in that Gemara? There was one pshat. The first pshat that we said when we learned it was that it was because they were puzzled. They weren't really Eidim. They were not. Right? We said Mashal Ma'adav Adam. If women would come into Beis and tell Beis something, so even if they weren't really there, they can't become Zayim because Beis doesn't pay any attention to them. They're not Eidim altogether. Now that's not. If that's the pshat in that Gemara, it's not relevant at all to this Gemara. Because over here, they are Eidim. They're Eidim, they're Kosher Eidim. But we said there was another pshat in that Gemara in Amud Aleph, which we quoted from the Beis Meir, that the pshat was that Beis Din wasn't supposed to listen to them. Not because they weren't Eidim, you need a shame aid, but because there's a halacha that Eidim only becomes Eimim if it's Nigmar Din Al Pihem. And over here, it turns out that it was a mistake that which was Nigmar Din Al Pihem. In the case on Amud Aleph, where on Sunday they said that Reuben stole the shor, and then on Monday they said that he shechted the shor, and then they became huzam on the geneva. So then Beis Din was never really supposed to listen to them about the tficha because they were already puzzled. So that which Beis Din did listen to them and was gemar din al piyam was betos. So a gemar din betos, it's like it was never gemar din. If, this is still not exactly the same as that, but then it's already, I think, more similar to this. I would say over here, the way I would say it is, not a Gemara Din Matos, but a Gemara Din, the Din was Nigmar, but now it's reverse Nigmar. It got reversed. Nigmar Din Al Piyam means that you need that Beis Din is taking them seriously. You need that Beis Din is ready to paskin based on them. Right, that's the Mishnah Makis that says Eidim Nasim Zayim Ashenigim Radin Al Piyam means that if they come into Beis Din and they say something, and Beis Din is still weighing whether or not to believe them, and then they become Huzam, they're not Chayav B'Kashu Zamam. Only if Beis Din already passed it, right? If Nigim Radin Al Piyam, then they're Chayav B'Kashu Zamam. So if there you saw that even though, you know, their Eidim was not disputed or refuted, it was not undone, but it just wasn't fully done. It wasn't fully accepted that Beis Din is acting on it, so then they can't become Zayimim. You only become Zayimim if the second Kat, the one that says Imanu Yisem, they're taking on an Eidos which Beis Din is listening to, Beis Din is following. And then they come and they say, well, that Eidos is really false. Oh, for that you become Zayimim. So over here, what our Gemara is saying, right, and that's why you have the case in Makis that if Beis Din had not yet passed in the right, the gavel hadn't come down yet, so then they're not subject to become Zayim. If other people come and say, Marim Yisrael complaining, we're not going to do a Sisson L'Kashu Zaman. And we had in the Gemara Norman Aleph that even if the Beis Din had already banged the gavel, but then it turned out that they shouldn't have, because they were really puzzled, so it was a Gemara Dim Betos. So then, again, we consider this an Eidos that Beis Din is not really acting upon, at least they're not supposed to be acting upon. So it's as if they're not acting upon it, and so an Aegis that Beis is not acting upon is not vulnerable to becoming Zemim, is not eligible to becoming Zemim. So this Gemara presumably means a similar thing, that they came in, they said their Aegis, and Beis Din didn't believe them, and Beis Din even passed him, right? We're talking about after the Gemara Din, that's the first Rashi, which we skipped, but just take a look at the beginning of it in When there was a Gemara Din before that Kasha, they came in on Sunday, they said that Reuven killed Shimon, and Beis Din accepted their Eidus, and they finished the whole Jewish Hakira, and they paskin, they banged the gavel. They said, okay, Reuven is Chayav Misa. Then on Monday, Shimon came, two more Eidim, Moshe and Aaron came in and said, no, Reuven didn't kill Shimon. So what would happen now is that the gavel gets unbanged. Meaning, Beis Din thought, okay, we're done. We have our evidence, we have the testimony, we have all the evidence we need, we're paskening, that's it, we're ready to go ahead. Reuven's Chayav Misa. But then, when two other Eidim come the next day and say Reuven didn't kill, so Beis Din says, ooh, it's a trade, trade. Now we don't know if Reuven did or didn't kill somebody, so we're not going to kill him. So it goes back to being an Eidus that Beis Din is not ready to act upon. So it's like it's missing a Gemar Din. Not because it's a betos, it wasn't, not that we're calling it betos, but it's along the same lines. It's a Gemar Din that gets undone. Yeah, we were Gemar Din, but we changed our mind. At this point, it's like an Eidus Shalei Nigmar Hadin, Al PM. So that's why we should have thought, coming to this Gemara, again, we're trying to get ourselves into the frame of mind of why Rabbi would be a Chiddush. We should have thought, if we were smart enough, we would have said that a guy is Kotter for this. Again, Rabbi comes in and says he's Chayev. But my problem is that we all were going to say he's Chayev, right? If I would have just asked you this case this morning before I said it, I would have said, well, what's the date? If Avram Yitzchak said on Sunday that Reuven killed Shimon, and then Moshe and Aaron say on Monday that he didn't kill Shimon, and then David and Shlomi say on Tuesday that Avram Yitzchak was with us, not complaining. What's the din? You all would have said, about the Chayev Misa, why not? They're Eidim Zayimim. But the first step of this Gemara is to understand why that's not a Devar Pashat. So this is L'chari of the Pshat, that once the second Kat puts it back into a state of Trey, that's like undoing the Gemar Din, because now it's a Aegis that Beis Din is not ready to carry out. And you only get a Kashu Zamam if the Mezimim come and strike down an Aegis that Beis Din was acting upon. And over here, Beis Din wasn't acting upon it. So it's like a chesaron in that t'nai of Ad Shigamar Din Al Piyam. That's why, if we were big Lamdanim, we would have been thinking this morning that they would not be Nerugim, that they'd be Potter. And then we'd be ready to start the Gemara. Along comes Rava, and Rava says, no. Big Lamdanim, though you may be, but the Din Lamaisa is that they are Nerugim. Why? Not because your svar was bad. Your svar is good. That the Hazama has to strike an Eidus which is a live Eidus, a Eidus that Beis Din is listening to, is acting upon. But over here, the Hazama didn't begin to strike on Tuesday. The Hazama began to strike on Monday. Because what happened on Monday, meaning your mistake is that you think Monday was a hakasha. That's one story. Tuesday, there was a hazama. Now, if hazama needs to strike a live aegis, so we have to see, was this aegis still live Tuesday morning? And oh, so we were thinking, no, because this aegis already got called into question on Monday. It was no longer affected by Tuesday morning, so it shouldn't be subject to hazama. But that's our mistake, that the hazama didn't start on Tuesday. The hazama really started on Monday. Because there's a svara, this is Rabbi's big chiddush, the hakasha tchilas hazama. That if there's hakasha on Monday and hazama on Tuesday, we look at everything that happened on those 2 days as a long process of hazama. You know, hazama doesn't need a long process. If Edim would just come in and say, Iman, Yitzhak, complaining, that would also be mad on them. But if Edim first say, Reuven didn't kill Shimon, and then Edim say, Iman, Yitzhak, complaining, then what we have is a two-step hazama. The basic idea seems to be, and again, we'll try to be masbul a little bit more, but the basic idea seems to be that if hazama is all about overturning an edus, by proving an edus wrong, so hakasha is a step in that direction. The hakasha, the two edim that say that Reuven didn't kill Shimon, they don't prove the edim wrong, but they do suggest that the edim are wrong. So they knock the Edom down a little bit from their pedestal that they were on of being believed. We thought they were telling the truth. Now another two Edom come and we say, oh, we're not sure if they're telling the truth. That's like a step towards, they were lying. They're telling the truth, they're lying, and the position of they might or might not be telling the truth, that's an in-between position. So what happened on Monday was a step in the direction of what eventually got completed on Tuesday. Therefore, since Hakasha Chilas Hazama, we see the Hakasha as being the beginning of the Hazama, so this Hazama happened over 2 days. So what we have a condition, we need the Hazama to strike an Aegis which is effective, but that's the beginning of the strike. And since that happened on Monday, so we look at when Monday's Aegis walked in, what was the state of the Aegis at that point? At that point, the Aegis was still being believed. On Sunday, they came in and said, Reuven killed Shimon. We were clamoring at PM, right? We were believing them 100%. And then on Monday, the Hazama started. Monday and a little more on Tuesday. Over the course of those 48 hours, we got a Hazama. But those 48 hours started with a live Aegis, with an Aegis that was Neman. And therefore, they're Neharagim. Therefore, these Aegis are going to be Chayim Misa. We do Kash Hazama. We consider it to be an effective Aegis because the Aegis, the Hazama is considered to have started from the time of the Hakasha. Now, as we're going to see as we go on in the Gemara, not everyone holds this way. Abaya pushes back. It's not mefurish in the beginning of the Gemara that he argues the mice, but he argues on the proof. Al Kopanim. But certainly there's a possibility that Hakasha is not considered Tchilas Hazama. They're considered two very different things. And Rabbis Chiddush, yeah, we're not going to go into that today. We'll spend another time, Blined, we'll come back to that. What's the state of that Chakira? Should we look at the Hazam, the Hakasha, and the Tchilas Hazama, that's one long process, or are they totally separate, different processes, and then we would say over here that the Hazama process only started on Tuesday, and the Aegis was no longer effective at the time that the Hazama started, and then the Aegis would be Potter. Those are the two ways to look at it. We have to come back to what's the state of that Shiloh, but I'll call upon him. Wait, but this is very important. What I think I hope that we have clear now is that it's almost like there's a step missing from the Shaka V'Tarya. The really hard part of this Gemara is the part that never gets spoken out. But the Hava Minu, you're supposed to read this Gemara and then realize that you were starting with a mistaken impression. Wait, I thought they'd be Nehragin, even though I didn't. No, that Hakasha Tchilas Hazama, but I thought they'd be Neharagim, why not? So, why not? That's the main question in this Gemara. Why should we have thought that they're not going to be Neharagim? So that's what we've explained, hopefully, that it's because, based on the Mishnah that says, you need that the Aegis is an Aegis that Basin was listening to, And so once Beis Din had already decided, you know what, we don't know if they're telling the truth or not, we're not listening to them. It's a trade, we're not killing Reuven. Once Beis Din was taking the position that we're not killing Reuven, so that's like an Eidus without a Gemara Din. So they can't be Ne'eravim. Amar Rava. Rava goes on, let's finish that first Rashi. Rava is going on a case where they came in on Sunday, they said Reuven killed Shimon. Beis Din did all the work on Sunday. They did a Jewish Chakira, they did the whole investigation, and they passed it. At the end of the day on Sunday, they said Reuven is Chayav Nisa. Why do we need that? Because if the Din was not Nigmar on Sunday, then of course there wouldn't be Ne'eragin. Forget about that Moshe and Aaron came and said the Reuven didn't kill Shimon. Even if that would never happen, even if you would just jump straight from the step of Aaron and Yitzchak say Reuven killed Shimon, David and Shlomi say Iman Nisa Mavakam Pliny. But they didn't even be Chayav Nisa for that, because that's an old halacha, that's the Mishnah in Makis Lahedya, that you need a Gemara Din. Shein Eidim Zayim Ne'eragim Ad Shei Gamar Din. That's the Mishnah Makis Daf Hei. But how can we took him to say for the Shmaitzin? And Zok Rashi, what I'm telling you now is really in the first Gemara later on in the Sugya. Going to Asu Beit Shrei V'Amri Hachi U'Pasaknu Aladina Apumayu. The Gemara later on adds these words, U'Pasaknu Aladina Apumayu, meaning that we already paskined it, Apumayu, on their words, on their mouth. That meaning that it's with the Gemara Din. So, that's the detail that first Rashi, before Rashi got into the real, what's really going on in our sugya, Rashi first took care of this sort of technicality, maybe, that you should understand that we're talking about if there's a Gemara Din. Which means, by the way, that the whole story, just putting our sugya aside about Hokushu B'Sayf Huzma, but just once we're talking about this Mishnah in Makis, that Eden Zayim always has to be after a Gemara Din. Keep in mind that there's another halacha which we learned earlier in the year, that Eden Zayim do not get punished if they come after the verdict was, after the sentence was carried out. Kasher Zaman V'Lo Kasher Asa. So it has to be after the Din was paskin, but before it was carried out. Now keep in mind, furthermore, that there's a halacha in Sanhedrin that they're not allowed to delay when somebody is chayav misa. I think it's learned from V'Hafta L'Reacha Kamaicha, ironically, that once somebody is chayav misa, you have to take care of it right away. You don't leave a person on death row. So that means that L'maisa, it was very not Shchiya. I mean, it's kind of hard. You need very precise timing for to have a case of Eidim Zayman. Because if it's too early, they don't become Zayman. If it's too late, they don't become Zayman. It has to be right in the middle, and that middle is pretty short. Just an interesting ha'ara, yeah.
Do we not say that in the case, which case, the Zomamim, and the Hafasha, the first Hafasha, some say they did it, some say they didn't do it. Don't we say at that point maybe they'd be Batel?
What do you mean by Batel? You mean Pasel? Their Aedis is Batel, meaning that we don't know if they're telling the truth, so we're not gonna carry out a psak.
Uh-huh. But then afterwards, we trust their Eidus to not go.
You mean if they'll be made about something else the next day? That's the Machlokes of Hunur Nerf Chistim of Abbas that we talked about earlier.
I guess I'm mixing up Pasel and Batel. I thought, like, if they were Batel, then you can't really accuse them of Hazama, but they're not Batel.
You know, I'm not sure if I agree with what you said. I didn't really follow, but okay. I want to go on. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rava Mino Amino. Rava says, where do I get this from? From where do I learn that Hakchasha is Tchilas Hazama, and that even though they're Hokushul V'Sayf Huzma, they're still Ne'eragin? And he brings a Braisa. Now, we really have, there's really a sugi within a sugi over here. The larger Shachavataria here is that Rav is going to bring this Braisa for the purpose of proving that HaKashach Tulis Hazama. So we're really in the Sugya of HaKashach Tulis Hazama over here. But it takes a while, and it's about a half an Amud here of Gemara before the Gemara gets back to that, because the Gemara is going to bring a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to be utterly unintelligible, the way it's written, it just doesn't make any sense at all. And the Gemara is going to do some trial and error to try to figure out what the Braisa means. And then, from that conclusion, we're going to say, ah, according to the way I now discover what the Braisa means, you're going to see from here that HaKashach HaNazama. The initial reading of the Braisa is not going to bear any resemblance to Rabbi's Halacha. You'll be scratching your head, why is Rabbi bringing right from this Braisa HaKashach HaNazama? But it's only after the Gemara finishes doctoring up the Braisa so that the Braisa should make sense. Then Rabbi says, ah, you see, now you can learn from there that HaKashach HaNazama. So what we have to do is put Rava on hold. Forget about HaKashach HaNazama for the time being, because this Braisa is really its own project. There's a whole Shaka Vitaria trying to make sense out of this Braisa, and that's what we have to work on now. So the Braisa says, the sign that we learned in the Braisa, Me'idanu b'ish pleini, we testify against pleini, against a certain person, Shesimei es'ein avdai. He blinded his eved. Simei es'ein avdai means that he blinded his eye. Right? He injured him in a way that took away his vision. Behifilas shinei, and he knocked out his tooth. So this sounds like, you know, there was a major battery going on. He was beating him up badly, and he inflicted two injuries. But significantly, they say that he blinded him first and knocked out his tooth after. And then the Braisa adds the words "Shaharei Harav Imrakein," and the master would say so, like meaning to say this is a story that the master would support, which doesn't make any sense. They came in and they said something terrible about the master. They said that he beat up his Eved. And there's terrible consequences from that. It means that the Eved goes free. So I don't know why the master would be supporting that. I think we're going to ask that later on. It's one of the clues that tells us that we're missing something from the story. But that's for now, we're just touching the words. So Rav Emikam means that the master would say so, meaning he would like that story. And then they turn out to be Zaymimim. If they said this story, which again strikes us as an anti-master story, but the Braisa seems to say that it's a pro-master story, then they become Zaymimim. Mishalman Dmei Ayin Le'Eved. They have to pay the Eved the value of the eye. Now this word Le'Eved, of course, takes you by surprise. Why are they paying to the Eved? They came in. They told a lie. But who was the lie in favor of? It seems to me like they told a lie in favor of the Eved. Here, this Eved, he's a slave. He was born a slave. He was going to die a slave and have all his future generations be a slave. And they came into base and they told the story that this master beat up the slave. Now, okay, in case anybody didn't know, so there's an important piece of background information over here. The Torah says that if somebody beats up a slave, then the slave goes free. The Torah was very strict on slave owners. You have to treat your slaves well. And in most societies in world history, that, you know, there is slavery, and the slave is considered your property, and as property, he has no rights. He has no personal rights. And so if a master wants to beat up a slave, he really gets away with it. But the Torah says that if you beat up your slave in such a way that it deprives him of the use of one of his limbs, like an eye, like a tooth, even something as minor as a tooth, right? It doesn't take such a geferlecha beating up to deprive somebody of the use of a tooth. And even so, that's too much. If a person treats a slave that way, he loses the right to have a slave. The slave goes free. So it cannot. What? No. The Gemara condition says that it's chaftal drashei varim. It's not if you just beat him up, meaning you give him a black eye, you know, or a black or blue mark anywhere, he doesn't go free for that. A broken bone that's going to heal, he doesn't go free for that. But if you chop off a finger, then yeah, he would go free for that. That's the Gemara in Kedushin. So this master, the Braisa uses the example of the eye and the tooth because those are the two examples in the Torah. But the Maisa, it's any limb. So this is basically an eidos about a master beating up his eved, which has the consequence that the eved goes free. So these eidim, they were liars. But who was their lie benefiting? It would seem that they were doing a gavaldik a favor for this Eved. The Eved was a slave, right? He thought he was doomed to remain a slave the rest of his life. Two of them walked into Beis Din, and they made up a story. They said, we saw the master beat him up, and knocked out his eye, and knocked out his tooth. So, and now the Eved gets to go free. So we think if anybody should be happy, the Eved should be happy. Our first clue that we're missing something is that the Braisa says that the master is happy, which shouldn't make any sense. But now it's even worse, right? Another clue in the same direction. The Braisa says that when their nimsu zayim, when we discover that they were lying, they have to take out their pocket, their wallets, right, and pay money. Who do they pay to? They pay to the Eved. Now that's not what we were expecting. Right? You, Asizim like Hashdam, you always have to pay to the victim of your Zamama. They were L'chair Zemim against the master. They came to deprive the master of a slave. He had a slave. He was a very nice master taking good care of a slave. And they came in and made up a baloney story that makes the slave go free. So I would have thought they should have to pay the master. And yet the Braisa says they pay the slave. So the Braisa doesn't seem to make sense. So the Gemara, again, the Braisa says that they pay Demei Ayin Le'eved, the value of an eye. Now why the... How would we come to that? Obviously, we don't know that either. So the Gemara says, I mean, what's the case over here? If you'll say kid the ketani, as it's stated, meaning that you take the price at face value, and the story is exactly what it says, there is no other kat, there's just them. It's like they walk in the basin, they say that this master is simeas ein avdai vehipel ashinai, and then they're nim suzaim. If that's the whole story, then nothing in the price makes sense. They should pay, you read that line, but Tamiya. They paid the price of an eye to the Eved. After they went and did him this favor that they brought him his freedom, they then have to pay him for an eye? Meaning, the Torah makes you pay somebody when you victimized him, when you did something against him. The Torah doesn't make you pay somebody when you helped him. Over here, they only helped this Eved. Why should they have to pay him for that? Void, second question. Right? So why are they paying the Eved? That's the first question. If anything, they should pay the Adam, but why do I say they should pay the Eved? Void, demei kulei Eved l'rabbi l'shlumi. You know what they should be paying? They should be paying the master. And not just the value of an eye, but the value of a whole entire Eved. Because he had an Eved, and they made the Eved go free, or their conspiracy was designed to make the Eved go free. So why don't they have to pay the master the price of an Eved? V'oid, and the third thing they don't understand this price is Sharei Rabbi Imrkein. It said in the price that the master would say so. Harami Nichle, would the master be happy with this? Why is the master happy hearing that he beat up his Eved and now the Eved has to go free? If really nothing like that ever happened, it's not true. Elav, so it must be, it's clear that the price is missing a step. And then it becomes simple. There's one simple step that you can just add to this braisa that makes everything make sense. Well, the step is that this cat, they're not the ones that started the story. They did not make up a story about the master beating up his Eved. That was already said before. Before they walked in, they came in on Monday. Before they ever came in, there were other agents that came in on Sunday, and they already told the base that this master beat up his Eved, and that all these injuries were sustained, the eye, the tooth, and this evidence for sure going free, and that's all a given. All they did was they reversed the order of the injuries. Whereas the first cat had said Hippilashinoi and then Simeasenoi. Alright, let's do that. So going to Asu Beitre, two of them came. The army and they said Hippilashinoi Simeasenoi. That he had knocked out a tooth and then the eye, or then the vision. Now, okay, before we continue reading, let's explain what outside. So what difference does that make? Why is that going to make a difference? So the key point over here, what the assumption underlying this whole Shaka Vitaria is that if you beat up your Eved, ultimately he's your Eved. If a person beats up an Eved, but like I said before, he just makes him black and blue, he you know, beats him with a stick, and he gives him a broken arm, so, you know, and then the Eved has to recover. But he doesn't knock off any limbs, and the Eved's not going free. On that, the halacha is that the Eved doesn't pay for that. The master doesn't pay for that. It's his slave, it's his property, he doesn't have to pay for that. If he knocks out a limb, so then the Eved goes free. But he still doesn't have to pay for it. He loses the Eved, yes. But what about paying? Like ordinarily, if I go over to... to a peer of mine, if one Yisrael goes over to another Yisrael and he beats him up, Shane, Ayin, or anything, he beats him black and forget Shane and Ayin, beats him black and blue, so he has to pay. There's a, right, the next paragraph on Masechta, we're not going to learn it this year, maybe some of you learned it on your own, but Parak HaChoyvel is that it says that when you chayvel b'chaveri, you have to pay chamish devarim, nezek sari b'sheves and b'sheves, you have to pay a lot of money for beating somebody up, and you brought to a beis din, you have to pay for that. If I beat up my Eved, I don't have to pay any of that. And so too, if I beat him up with what's called Rashi Eivarim, I knock out a limb, and he goes free. But still, I don't have to pay for it. I don't have to pay the Nezek Tzari B'Shevus and Boishas. I pay, he goes free. That's the reason. There's a Knas in the Torah that he has to go free, but there's no Nezek Tzari B'Shevus and Boishas. But if after I knocked out one of the Rashi Yivarim, so he already has the din to go free, I then inflict an additional injury, and at this point he's already a Ben Chayrin, or at least he has a din to be a Ben Chayrin, so we treat him as a Ben Chayrin. So now already I'm beating up a Ben Chayrin. For that, I have to pay Nezek Tzari B'Shevus and Boishas. So therefore, it makes a great difference what was the order of the injuries. Because whichever injury came first, for that he goes free. But he doesn't get paid for it. Whichever injury came second, that he gets paid for. And now these two injuries, obviously, have different values. A tooth. Tooth is a tooth. You know, you have 32 of them. You lose one, you have 31. So how much does the value of a slave go down? How much would a person's value on the slave market get affected? How much, or even if you talk about the effect on his life, for Legabe, his Shevis, his Boishas, his Tsar, all of that, Repoy. Let's call it $100. An eye, on the other hand, one looks like if you make a person blind, okay, we're not talking about totally blind, I'm blind in one eye, but even so, blind in one eye, certainly if you knocked out the eye, so there's, of course, you know, the Boishas that would be involved in that, but altogether, a person whose vision, you don't have to start with 32 eyes, only start with two. So if you lose one, there's only one left. That's 50%. So let's say that's $100,000. The Nezek Tzari B'Shevus and Boishas for the ayin is going to be $100,000. For the shame, it's like $100. Now, this master went over. He started clobbering his eved. Boom, 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 boom. He beat him up. But what exactly was the order of the blow? The boom, boom, boom. What order? Which one came first? And it's going to make a $99,000 difference. $99,900 different. Because if he was Hippolas Shinoi first, the Simeas Enoi second, he's got to pay for the ayin. So then he pays $100,000. But if he was Simeas Enoi first, and the effect of that was that just that the Evan goes free, and then he was Mapolas Shinoi, and that he has to pay for, because now he's already Ben Chayrin, he has to pay, so he pays $100. Hare Rav Omer Kane. Now you know why the master was applauding that story. When they came into Basin and they said, Simeas Enoi, the Hippel Ashinoi, of course the master was in support of that story. Because Evan was going free regardless. Other Aiden came in yesterday and reported that I beat up my Evan and my Evan's going free. But the way they said it, my Evan's going free and I have to pay $100,000. Then these Aiden came in and they said that no, the Evan's going free but I only have to pay $100. So that's now I understand why Harei Rav Omer came. Then, right, meaning the master would say so, the master would support that story. That's the version that he likes. And then it says, when him Zayman, then it became Zayman, so they paid Demei Ayin LeEved. They paid the Eved, they don't pay the master. They weren't coming to cost the master, to inflict any costs on the master. That which they were making a slave go free, the slave was going free anyway, because the slave was going free from Sunday's testimony. What they did with Monday's testimony is just that they made it that the slave should go free with $100 in his pocket instead of $100,000 in his pocket. So whom were they inflicting a cost upon? The Eved. They were zaiming against the Eved that he shouldn't get paid for his ayin. So therefore, when they become zaimim, who do they pay? The Eved. What do they pay? Demei ayin. Now the whole price makes sense. The Mishalim demei ayin le'eved. Let's read that inside. El Alav going to also be treva army yipel l'shini v'simei yisini. Two other Eidim had come previously and they said that first the tooth was knocked out and then the eye. The boy basically arrived the May Enoi. At that point, the master would have had to pay for the eye, which is a huge expense. Besides for losing his evidence, he would also have to pay for the whole eye. Vos would betray Messiah, and then two Adam came in the middle, right? We'll call that Monday. Ramri, and they said Enoi, first the eye, Mahadashini, and then the tooth. So according to their story, the master has to pay no more than just a tooth. So you have now a hakrasha, a conflict, a denial between the first pair and the second pair, each one saying that their version is correct. Behind you, and now I understand why the Bryce said that the master would say so, the master would like that story. He's happy with what they say, because according to their version, he loses Eved, yes, but he was going to lose Eved anyway, but he only has to pay $100 rather than $100,000. That's very good for him. So that's the Rei Rav Omer Kane. So now, okay, now that's the end of the story within the story. That's the end of the Shaka V'Tayra that helps figure out Pshat and the Braisa. Now we come back to the larger Shaka V'Tayra where it says, you know what I see from there? These Eidim, they end up paying the Eved. Why? Because they were Nimsu Zaymim. But at the time that they were Nimsu Zaymim, they were already Mukashim. Because they were Mukashim before they got on the door. I mean, as soon as they said something, it was already Bahakasha. Because Eidim had come in on Sunday and said one story. They came in on Monday and they said the opposite. So as soon as they said it, it was Bahakasha. It was a Trey to Trey. There was never a moment in time when their Eidim was standing. As you know, and Basin was acting upon it. Their Aedis from its delivery was already Bahakasha. Was already had Basin saying, well, I don't know if they're telling the truth or they're not telling the truth. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. I don't know if they're telling the truth. It was already Bahakasha. And it says in this Braisa that when they Nimsu Zaymim, they pay. Again, for putting aside all the confusion, who do they pay? Why do they pay him? Why not pay the other guy? But it says clearly in the Braisa that when they become Zaymim, they pay. So that means we're carrying out the din of Kashrus Zamam, even though there was a Hakasha before the Hazama. And like we said before, Rav, if not for Rav, we were supposed to think, maybe we wouldn't have been smart enough to think it, but we were supposed to think, if we didn't know Rav's Chiddush, that if there's a Hakasha before the Hazama, then you're not Chayef Kashrus Zamam. Rav's Chiddush was that since the Hakasha Chilas Hazama, so even though there's a Hakasha before the Hazama, but you still Chayef Kashrus Zamam. And over here in this Braisa, you have a case of Hakasha before the Hazama. What's the Hakash before the Hazama? Not exactly like Rebbe's case, the opposite way around. But they were mukhish, by the time they spoke, they were already mukhish. So there was a Hakasha on the record before the Hazama. And then when the Hazama came, we carry out the Kashu Zamam. So you see that Rebbe's right, that Hukash Lubsay Puzmu, Narogin, over here it's not, Narogin by Dr. Kapadam, we carry out the Kashu Zamam. Why? Because Hakash Lubsay Puzmu, El Shalay Nigmara. So that's Rebbe's right, that's the Minah Aminala. The Ketani, just to finish this off, the Ketani and the Braisa states, V'nimsu Zaymim Metzi'ai, that if the middle Eidim becomes Zaymim, V'shalmim Me'ayin Le'Eved, they have to pay the Eved the price of his eye. Shema Mi'ah, we learn from here, Chasha Tchilas Hazamah, that Chasha is considered the beginning of Hazama. So we won't say that the Hazama, by the time the Hazama came along, it was no longer a good Eidus, because the Hazama came along earlier. When the Hazama started, it was still a good Eidus. Okay, so,
is there any opinion of Tovke the Dibor to link, like, one act, like, one injury of, not like the Dibor, but like the
I don't think it makes a difference. I don't think it makes a difference over here. Okay, so there's two things going on over here. We have a few minutes left today, but I want to start, well, let's put aside what I'm calling the larger Shaka V'Tayra, Hakash Tchilas Hazama, and talk a little bit about the Eved story, about that which we're learning over here, that if an Eved gets beaten up, so he goes free, so it's clear in the Gemara that whichever injury happens second will have a din of paying for it. Nezek, Sari, V'Sheves, and Boshes. Whichever injury happened first, there'll be no payment for that. That's clear in the Gemara, right? That's why it matters what the order was. If really the ayin came first, but they claim, I'm sorry, if really the ayin came second, so he was supposed to get paid for his ayin, and they claim the ayin came first, they'd be costing him the whole price of his ayin. Because whatever came first, he doesn't get paid for. That's what you see in our Gemara. Again, maybe it's a sort of like Agav Ruch over here, but I don't think there's another Gemara where you actually see this. The whichever injury came first, you're not going to get paid for it, right? Which means, to put that in simpler terms, if it was a simple story where there was just one injury, a master has an Eved, the master beats up his Eved and injures him, right, with his eye, his tooth, and so the Eved goes free. That's all that happens. The Eved goes free. But there's no tashlumin for that. There's no nezek or tzar or ripur or shevet or baishas. You don't have to pay for the blow that makes the eved go free. That's clear in this gemara. Maybe you would think that that's a different partial misfara. Anyway, but we'll think about that in a moment. But first, I want to make sure that we all understand that it's muhach in this gemara that the injury for which the Eved goes free, there's no tashlumah for that. There's no nezek or tari for Shabbos HaVayishis for that. There's only tashlumah for the next injury, if there'll be another injury. But in a regular case, it's just one injury. Right? Well, like when you're learning Chumash, the Torah says that if a master goes over and he injures the Eved in his eye and takes away the Eved's vision or takes away the Eved's eye, so the Eved goes free. But that's it. The Eved doesn't get paid for that. The master doesn't have to pay him for that. So, why is that? So I guess, you know, the simple answer you would say, and probably doesn't come as such a big surprise to you, of course not. It was his Eved, right? He's my slave, he's my property. Nothing happens to me for beating him up. I don't have to pay him for that. It's my property. Just like if I would beat up my animal, I wouldn't have to pay for that. So if I beat up my slave, I also don't have to pay for that. So maybe it seems like a Dover Pasha. The Ksais, though, has a kasha. The Ksais says, you know, there's a halacha, when a person beats up someone else, right, one Jew to another, he's over a lois aseh. It actually says in the Torah that you're not allowed to hit someone. It's not just when you were kids we were taught that. It actually says so in the Torah. Where does it say it in the Torah? It's a little bit hard to find. When the Torah says that when Basin is giving somebody Malkus, so it says over there that they can't add to the Malkus, you know, 39 lashes, but no more. From their Chazal derived, that's a lois aseh on any unjustified, any unwarranted beating up and assault. Meaning, even a Shliach Beis Din is chayev for assaulting somebody if he did more than what he was authorized to do. So certainly that means that between you and me, if we beat each other up, well, not you, not from me to you, that's different. But that's the Mishnah Makis that a Rabbi Talmidah can do whatever he wants. But if between, you know, Enan Lachaveirai, if one beats up another, so he's over on a lois aseh. So usually that means you get Malkus. Do you get Malkus if you beat somebody up? If somebody beats somebody up and leaves them injured, is there Malkus for that? So the Gemara says, so really, theoretically, there should be. The reason why there's no Malkus is because it's Tashlumen. That's exactly, because Shevas and Baishas, there's Tashlumen. So we have a klal, which we touched upon, I think, in the Gemara on Ayin Aleph, was it? We learn that you ain't like umishalim, and therefore ordinarily one is not chayav malchus when he's choyel b'chaveira. But it's not just theoretically that there's a lois aseh and that there could be malchus. The halacha is that if somebody is choyel b'chaveira and the tashlumin is pachis mishav pruta, so that's not called tashlumin, then he's chayav malchus, which comes out a very funny halacha. Right? If I beat him mamish to smithereens, then I don't get malchus. But if I just inflict a very, very minor injury so that the tashlumin is part of the shavu pruta, then I'm chayav malchus. Practically speaking, halacha lemaisa, I don't know if it could ever happen. I mean, could there be an injury that's a real injury that I did a real chavala and the tashlumin is part of the shavu pruta? I mean, the shavu pruta is pretty small. So, you know, it's hard to imagine a real life case. What? Plucking someone's hair, even the tsar has to be part of the Shavapruta. Would you let me pull out your hair for less than a nickel? Not likely, right? So it's hard to find a case where even the tsar, not the tsar, not the baishas, all of it, is nothing that adds up to Shavapruta. But that's neither here nor there. See, the Gemara says it's halacha, and it's megal das alumnus, right? The Gemara is not just interested in cases that are going to happen in real life. The Gemara is very interested in halachas that help us understand how dinim work. The Gemara says that if someone's chayav b'chaver, part of the shavu pruta, he's chayav malchus. What the Gemara means to say is that be'etzem this is a loisas, and really you should be chayav malchus. The only reason why you're not chayav malchus is because it ain't like a mishalim. But theoretically, if you weren't being mishalim, then you'd be chayav malchus. Frektik says the kasha. If somebody is chayvel in his eved, why is he not chayv malchus? Because, after all, he's no tashlumin, but he was over lois aseh. Because this is pashut. That meaning, you might say, you know, maybe if you're thinking, you know, other slavery in other societies, you're thinking the American South, it's mamash, it's my property, I can do whatever I want with him, why should I get malchus? I didn't do anything wrong, it's not an aveira. So that's for sure not true. It's only in mamonis that we say he's your property. But in human rights, he's been on l'chaveirah. You're not, a person is chayev misa for killing his eved. The ritzicha is the same ritzicha. It's mamash ritzicha. And presumably that means that, you know, you're not allowed to lend him money with interest, and you have a mitzvah shavas aveda, and you're not allowed to make him feel bad or say lashon hara. All the benan l'chaveirahs apply to avadim. Just in mamonis, not. So, Avada, if you're the loisas of Pen Yosef, he's over. But he's potter from the Tashlumin because it's my Eved and property, he's my property, and he's mominus, he's my property. So I have here a funny situation. I have a Chavala where there's no Tashlumin, but there is the Aveira of the loisas, so why don't I get Malkus? So the ethics says it's Kasha. He assumed, and this part of the piece is a little bit funny, he assumed without bringing a raya that you don't get malchus, meaning one could answer this question and say it's no question, maybe you do get malchus. Where does it say that you don't get malchus? I don't know, it seems that he, for some reason, I don't know if he had a raya and he didn't write it, or he just thought it was a different pashut, can't be, maybe. I just venture to say that maybe the Gemara that I was just telling over about the Bachat Mishav Puta, it gives the impression that that's the only case the Gemara could come up. Like I said, that's a very bizarre case. Maybe it's not even a real case. From that Gemara, you get the impression that you never really get Malkus for being Chayav B'Chaveira. It's only theoretically, because it's only if it's a Pachas B'Shav Pruta, and there's never going to be a Pachas B'Shav Pruta. So it's almost like the Gemara is saying, there's a theoretical Malkus. But if this is true, so why is it only theoretical? So maybe based on that Gemara, he thought that it must be that you don't really get Malkus. Again, I'm not sure why he assumed it, but he assumed that you don't get Malkus. I'm mainly asked the question, why don't you get Malkus? After all, there's no Tashlumin, so you should get Malkus. So the Ksei said an answer. Okay, we're going to run out of time here. I'll start to say over the terrace of the Ksei, and you can mull over it over Shabbos. Maybe you'll figure out how, coming back to our Sugya, why this might be problematic. What the Ksei says is, you know why there's no Malkus? Because you're not really potter from paying him. Really, you have to pay him. Just since Mashakana Evikana Rabbi, so let's say you beat him up. So you really should, if he was your friend, you would chay $50,000. So you chay $50,000 here too. But what's going to happen? You're going to pay him $50,000, and then you're going to take back the $50,000 because he's my Eved. In property, in monetary, it belongs to me. If somebody else would give him $50,000, that would belong to me. So when I give him $50,000, it also belongs to me. So I'm chaying the $50,000, but then I can take back the $50,000. So there's no reason why I should give it. I just keep it in my pocket. But I'm theoretically chayav. That's why there's no malchus. There's like the Ksais. Again, the Ksais assumed there was no malchus, and he asked the question, why is there no malchus? He said, this is the reason. Because you're not really potter. You're really chayav, but since Mashakon and Kana Ev and Kana Rabbi, therefore you don't have to pay it. What? No, the reason why you don't get Malkus is because you're chayev to pay money. And like Umashalim, the payment path is from Malkus. You don't pay? No, theoretically you're chayev to pay, just Mashkon and Vekon and Rabbi, you'd be able to take it right back, so you don't actually pay. But since in theory you were supposed to pay, there's a chayev mamon, that path is from the Malkus. So now, okay, so we're going to stop there. But when we come to our Sigya, we're talking about the injury with which he went free. Is this still going to work? Okay, to be continued.
Thank you, Abby.
You're welcome.
If it's a bala, then you can't use it. You can't use it. You can't use
it. Let me check the case. Let me go take
action.
If it's a bala, then you can't use it. No.
I think
I'm a Jew.